introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, all right, all right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and we are here. Happy days are here again. We got the full crew, and we're just going to jump right into it. We got a fun show, great guest, and a couple Vikings topics to talk about here. But before we do all that, obviously, we got to do some introductions. He's back, ladies and gentlemen, he's back. QB1, how you doing? What's going on? How you been, my man?
Good, man. You know, game day is quickly approaching, so I'm back. I'm excited, and let's get this thing on the road.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Miles Gorham, how you doing? Have you
good?
Brought any more animals home from the pet shop since we last spoke?
Oh, we're maxed out.
What's going on with you, man? How you doing?
Good. Busy. Real busy. Tired. It's my wife's birthday tomorrow, though, so.
Okay.
So big thanks.
It's gonna go. You got everything locked in, reservations, all that stuff. You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Don't mess this up, Miles.
I'm good until I'm not good.
Okay. Well, if you need any tips, call JR. He can help you out.
You better do good. Ain't gonna be no football for you.
Miles gonna be at Bed Bath and Beyond during the game on Saturday if he messed this up. Saxy Prince.
Yeah, man.
My man. How's it going, man? How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Had a very eventful weekend. Mom's, she actually turned 60 last week, but Sunday was the big celebration. And in Nigerian culture, you know, 50, 60, 70, those years kind of mark something really, really special. So you usually throw a big celebration and whatnot. So yeah, it was a good time. Got to meet up with a bunch of family. We took a lot of photos. We had a lot of activities, dancing. I shared some videos of spray dancing happening and whatnot. Lots of music. It was a good time.
Okay. And what's funny is my cousin just came back from Nigeria. She's actually over there because her pops is Nigerian. He's in Nigeria. It was his 70th birthday. And she came back and was like, I have never felt so poor in my entire life.
Oh, yeah. No, if you go to a Nigerian celebration in Nigeria, whether it be a funeral or these big parties, that's a week-long celebration. So you are partying from sunup to sundown for an entire week.
Yeah. She was like this. It was like on a level that she was just not prepared for at all. But yeah. Amazing times in the pictures, like you said, like it was a party.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, let's hop on into this thing because we've talked about it a couple times already on this show. We've talked about it on Pocket Protectors. I feel like every Vikings podcast has talked about it, but obviously with the news that came out, you know, we got to talk about it again, and it's the offensive line. And should we panic? Nick Easton. Surgery, herniated disc, looks like he's going to IR. He was a starter. His value, though, might not have just been the fact that he was a starter, but the fact that he was versatile, able to play, you know, guard, came in, obviously, when Elfline went out, played some center, and now we got a dude named Cornelius taking snaps at center. Probably got to sign another guy at some point if Elfline's still not ready to go. JR, I know you've talked about it. You've talked about it. Yeah, where are we at? And is it time to panic at this point based on what's going on with the Vikings offensive line?
I wouldn't say panic, but I definitely would be worried because of Nick Easton has been a crucial part to the offensive line. Now, everyone likes to say that he is replaceable, and I firmly believe that he is replaceable and that he is an average offensive line in the Vikings system, but he is a guy that has been here. He's developed that chemistry with Riley Reiff and with Pat Elflein. And we all know within that front five, it's all about chemistry and how well they work together. Now you're plugging in an entirely new piece. Yes, Danny Isadora got some snaps there last year, and most of the other guys got some snaps there last year as well, but it's just different when you know the guy beside you, especially when you're at center or tackle. And we saw Riley Reiff did play better when Easton was beside him as opposed to those other guys. And not only do you lose your starting left guard, but you lose your backup center as well. And Nick Easton has been taking those snaps all camp at center when he was healthy and out on the field. So me personally, I think it's a huge loss for the Vikings. But Nick Easton is a replaceable type of offensive lineman. But I don't think you can do it right away because there's slim pickings on the market right now. We all know offensive line injuries can derail the season. So we definitely should be worried.
Okay. Miles, scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the way things are going with the Vikings offensive line? And then what should we do about it?
I'm probably about a 6 right now, 5 or 6, like right in the middle. I'm pretty even keel about it. I wouldn't say I'm used to it. Well, in a way, we're kind of used to it. But I think if you can – I think I'm okay right now because you know guys like Pat Elflein and Mike Remmers are coming back. Now, if they have some setbacks or, you know, they're not ready to go by week one, then I'll definitely – that my number will go up a lot higher. But if they're both healthy and ready to go and good to go and they look good, you know, the rest of the camp that they get before week one, I'll be all right because I think being able to replace a left guard is a little easier than trying to replace guys like a Riley Reiff or – you know, your tackles, so, or even a Pat Elflein for that instance. So, I think you can kind of replace one guy in the interior at the guard positions if you needed to. And I think with Nick Easton, I'm not saying it's an easy replacement just because I think there are some things he does that not many guys on the roster can do, but I think they can find ways to replace his production with whether it's a veteran free agent. There's a couple guys out there like Jari Evans or, no, not Richie Incognito. That's not happening. So, like Luke Jokel is another option. I don't think they'd bring him in, but he could be a potential option out there because he's young. He'd be really cheap, so there might be that. And then there's ways of trades. Like you can always the team's probably doing everything they can to find out what's the best solution they can do to find another guy to bring in because they're now at 89 players on the roster with putting Nick Easton on IR today. So they have an open spot. They have a bevy of draft picks next year, especially with all the comp picks they're about to get. So what I could see them doing is using one of those extra picks as a way to get a lineman, you know, from a team. I know offensive line's been a, you know, kind of a roller coaster ride for a lot of teams in the NFL right now. But if the Vikings were able to call on some teams that, you know, may have drafted some offensive linemen pretty early this year who aren't starters right away yet, but they might be looking to push those guys ahead. My perfect example is Buccaneers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have Evan Smith as their starting left guard right now. He's 33 years old, but they drafted Alex Kappa in the third round this year. I haven't heard any reports about how Cap has looked so far this year, but so far in camp. But if he's looked good and, you know, things start to pan out and they kind of want to, you know, get a draft pick or something and for the future too, I could see them potentially giving up a guy like Evan Smith for a, you know, a third round, day three pick, like a fifth round pick or sixth round pick or something like that. Which, you know, if you're the Vikings, I jump all over that. Evan Smith was really good last year for the Bucs. He's super athletic, so I think he'd really fit in this offense, and he'd be that veteran on the inside that you could really use next to a guy like Pat Elflein, especially with Joe Berger retiring this year. So I think if the Vikings are going to do anything, they're going to try to bring in a guy who has a little bit more tread under his tire, has some more experience, so that you kind of know what you're getting in a way, and just a guy that isn't so green. You want to give a guy an opportunity. But on the other hand, if they were to stay in house, one option they could look to go to is Aviant Collins, who's played a little bit of left tackle and left guard. And he could be that guy because he's super athletic, so he can move in space really well on screens and pulls. I think he's still getting his feet wet in terms of playing and, you know, understanding the inside and how that game works. But he's got that nasty mean streak to him. He's a little light, you know, at about – he's right around 300 pounds, I think, right now. But he's a mean dude. He likes to play mean, which I love. I love my offensive lineman to do that. So he could be an option there too. Or they could just stick with Tom Compton, which – I'm not saying Tom Compton's a world beater. I'm not saying he's terrible, but I think there's somewhere in between where he's nothing. He's definitely nothing special, and he is what he is, but I think he's serviceable, but I don't know if he'd be the guy. He's never played a full 16-game season as a starter, so I'd be really worried about how he'd hold up in 16-plus games potentially, so – That'd be where my worry is with him. I kind of more see him as a valuable Swiss Army knife. He could play a little everything. So I'd like him to be more of that backup reserve role anyway. So if they could come in and bring somebody in, I think that'd be a better solution for the team.
Yeah, Miles. And, you know, obviously we put out an ask for some questions. And one of the things that came in as a response to you was, I know you've had some different suggestions out there. One of the things that I think you threw out was Joe Thuney from the Patriots.
Yep.
And one of the questions people have is, how high a draft pick would you give up to shore up the offensive line?
See, for me, I wouldn't give up anything higher than a day three pick. I think the highest I'd probably go is like a five, in my opinion. I don't think I'd go any higher than that, just because you're not. It all comes down to what's that player you're trading for's contract look like, what's their age, overall, what's their overall play. Lots of factors that come into it. Don't just go into it being, you know, as looking desperate and willing to throw in, you know, a high pick just to get a guy that might be, like, let's say, for example, like I said, Evan Smith is 33 years old. He's a really good player, but he's really cheap. And he's got 2 years left on his contract. So, like, if you're a team like the Tampa Bay Bucks, you don't see a reason to unload him. He doesn't have a high salary that you need to get rid of. So you'd want to get a little bit to give a little bit. So, but a guy like Joe Thuney, on the other hand, he's 26, I think he is. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He's making pennies, but he's one of the best guards in the league right now. So to me, he would cost a lot more money. Then you would eventually probably have to pay him a lot of money down the road. But with a guy like Evan Smith, and so you'd have to give up high draft capital for a guy like Joe Thuney, and then end up having to pay him down the road too. Where a guy like Evan Smith, you get a veteran guy who's good. You spend a decent pick on him, but you know what you're getting for the next 2 years, and then you can cut bait. You can draft a guy by that time. You can have whatever you need, but he's kind of more of that 2 year window. Where a guy like Joe Thuney, you'd have to kind of factor in what the other contracts you have going on. So a lot of that factors into the equation.
Okay. Saxy Prince, last offensive line question. And really, we'll start with you, and then we'll get everyone's opinion on this to bring it home on the offensive line, because we've talked about the offensive line quite a bit. Is given how bad folks thought the offensive line was going to be before the Easton injury, how much does this really change your outlook on where the offensive line is going to be for the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your perception, you know, going into the offseason. I think, like Miles has said, losing Joe Berger was probably the biggest loss the Vikings' offensive line could have faced, considering he was the best offensive line that we had last season. You know, losing Nick Easton it's tough because of the fact that you know, the hope was that Nick Easton was going to get better, improve for what he was last season. And he wasn't really that great last season. So you were banking on potential, which, you know, for some people, that's enough for them to kind of perceive the Vikings offensive line to be better than it could have been. And for some people, it's just like, well, we always knew he was bad. So it doesn't really matter as much. I'm kind of on the side where I was banking on him improving. So
are you at a drag race right now?
No, it's just people are being assholes right now.
Okay.
But
whoa, language.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a family pod.
It is a family pod. I thought the kitties were in sleep because this is a lighter pod, so, you know, CTP after dark. So, anyways, no, my perception is, like, it hurts because I think because you don't have enough unproven talent behind Easton, even though he was playing pretty poorly, I still think that he has accrued enough live game action that some of these new guys who could have potential higher upside, but, you know, they've never seen you know, they've never seen a starter, they've never seen live action game.
Okay. All right. JR, rapid fire. How much does the Easton injury change your thoughts on the Minnesota Vikings offensive line?
Oh, that's a good question. I would probably say, if it was on a scale of 10, I'd say about 5, because I think he's replaceable, and I think a guy like Danny Isadora or Tom Compton can fill in and give them somewhat of what they got out of Nick Easton. Now, I don't think either one of those guys are right now the player that Nick Easton can be or was at the present time, but I think they could eventually evolve into the value that he had for the offensive line at the guard spot.
And Miles, how about you, man?
I thought we talked about it.
What?
We talked about it. I was a 5 or 6.
But that was like overall. I'm saying, like, you know, him being gone. You're just a meh? Okay.
Oh, Nick Easton? Oh, I mean. Nick Easton.
How much does that change your outlook, Nick Easton? From where you were before to where, like, him going out, how much does that change? How big is the change? Or do you think it's just like a meh, no big deal?
I said on the time under today, I think the biggest loss for him besides his athleticism is the fact that he's got that position flexibility from guard to center. So with Elfline being out, you had at least a viable center in place to replace him while until he gets back, or if he were to get hurt again. Now you kind of have definitely an unproven guy named Cornelius Edison. So he kind of filled two positions for you. So there's a value in that sense. So the depth really takes a hit there. So that's probably my biggest worry. Like I said, as a starter, I think he's replaceable, but the depth aspect of it is kind of where it comes into play for me.
Okay. All right. Let's move along. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this one, but it's fun. You know, it happens. We got to talk about it a little bit here. JR, Diggs, Rhodes, forced to sit out camp, basically put on timeout for getting into it, fighting, jawing, however you want to kind of break it down. What are your thoughts on kind of this level of competition, this level of intensity this early in camp? Big deal, not a big deal? Is it even something that people should be talking about?
No, it's not a big deal at all. I think the whole big deal part of it, though, is them getting sent home afterwards. And I think that was great by what Mike Zimmer did, sending them home, because it carried over to the next day in the walkthrough, according to what beat writers were saying. And I think that was the biggest reason why Mike Zimmer did send him home. We see training camp fights all the time, especially with receivers and cornerbacks. We all know those are the two positions usually with the biggest personalities and biggest egos on the team. So whenever they're competing against each other, it's just a friendly competition. And that's what happened with Diggs and Rhodes. So I don't think it's a big issue. And I think they've both put it to the side and put it past them right now.
Okay. Miles, how about you, man? You've obviously, I mean, you've been on both sides of this equation. You've been a wide receiver. You've also been, you know, the guy out there putting clamps on folks. So, you know, is this a big deal? What are your thoughts?
No, I like, to me, if it was other unknown players on the roster, like new guys to the team or guys that had some history of, you know, of this kind of stuff, maybe. But, like, these are the two guys, probably the two of the most level-headed, but two of the most competitive guys on the roster. So they've competed so much over the last 3.5 years, 3+ years since Diggs came in the league. This is what, the fourth year now. It is what it is. Like, they're just talking. They're, you know, both have gotten the best of each other. I'm sure, you know, every time Diggs beats Rhodes, he lets him know it, just because, you know, I feel like Diggs has a little bit more security now. He can, not that he wasn't himself before, but, like, the dude wants to win. He just got paid, so there's the security there that he knows he's going to be here. I think he's just, you know, some of that fiery competitiveness is coming out. And obviously Rhodes too. Rhodes has that. Like we saw the way he put the clamps on Odell Beckham Jr. and the shit talking that he had there. It's like it's a battle all the time. You're like they're you know the best players of the positions on the team in my opinion. They're always constantly battling. Yeah, it just it rolls over. Like this stuff happens. They're family. It's not a big deal. I Zim didn't make a big deal about it besides the fact that he felt it went a little too far and he didn't want it to carry over into his practice. So he said, y'all go home, you know, settle yourselves. And apparently they just watched practice from up in the boxes or whatever, you know, the coach's offices or whatever that they have at the practice field. So I don't think it's any big deal. So it is what it is.
Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts on the fight? And given that our guys are fighting with each other already in camp, I need you to set the line for number of fights against the Jaguars.
Well, I don't have very much to say to this. And the only thing I really have to say is I'm glad that Xavier Rhodes is fighting against who he thinks is the number one wide receiver. And then to say the number of fights, I think 3 breakout. And I think Adam Thielen is going to be a part of one of them.
Ooh. Okay. I like that. I hope it's not against Jalen, though. That won't be any fun. Trash talking between Thielen and Jalen. That won't be fun at all. I don't want that to happen.
No, because Thielen's going to get his butt foot.
I don't want that. And then right here, I'm going to be like, yo, we're going to go talk to our guest. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with a very special guest. We have Nick Kendall joining us today. Nick is a writer analyst at the Mile High Huddle, and he's here to help us break down this awesome upcoming matchup that we have between our Vikings and the Denver Broncos. Nick, how's it going, my man? How are you doing? And I guess how much more stuff do you have to get ready before you head back out into the great outdoors?
Oh, not too much. I got my 80-liter backpack all ready to go, and it's going to be a pretty low-key camping trip this weekend. It's mostly just going to be with some former college friends, so it'll be mostly drinking than the actual outdoor parts, but that's okay. You know, I'm going to drink some good craft beer and hang out with some friends, but ready for football. And Baker Mayfield's already been lighting it up today, so it feels like it's back. It feels like football is finally here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It is great to have this many games on. Well, got to ask you, obviously, the most important question, the question that all Vikings fans really, really, really want to get to the bottom of, which is, how has Case Keenum looked out there in Denver? And is he the man to lead you guys to the promised land?
Well, I feel like that's a double-edged question. You got Case Keenum out there, and he looks significantly better than anything the Broncos have had on the field for the past 2 seasons. And he's going against guys like Paxton Lynch and Chad Kelly, who are struggling tremendously. But Case looks good, and I think the biggest thing that he's bringing to the table is that they have a leader. You know, they've been really missing those intangibles, and you got to have that at that quarterback position. Is he the guy that's going to lead him to the promised land? I'm not sure about that. I feel like he can be a driver of a car, but not the car, if that makes sense. Like, if you put him in the Jacksonville Jaguars roster instead of Blake Bortles, I think that team could contend in the AFC, get to the Super Bowl. I don't know if the Broncos don't have the Jags roster right now. That offensive line's not as good as what the Jags have, and the defense. And Broncos' defense is obviously pretty good, but I don't think it's the level of the Jags is. So I think he's going to lead the Broncos to AFC West contention this year. The AFC West is up in the air. But as far as the Super Bowl leading guy, you know, leading them to the promised land, probably not, but he's definitely been a breath of fresh air for everybody in Dove Valley, and I'm excited to see what he can do this season.
Well, you gave me a perfect segue there to the next question I was going to ask you. A bit tongue-in-cheek, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be too promising. You guys have any spare offensive linemen you can let us borrow for maybe a couple weeks?
We actually have some depth on the offensive line this year. I feel like the offensive line has been something that Elway and Kubiak, who's now actually starting to transition, the talk is he's going to actually take over general manager here in the next, maybe even at this season. But Broncos actually have some depth on the offensive line this season, which is exciting. Unfortunately, we lost a Menelik Watson, who's transitioning to the interior for the game Saturday. But the offensive line looks better. But just like I feel like almost every single team across the league, the depth of offensive line, especially when you compare it to second and third string defensive line, is just not that great.
Okay. Hey Nick, how have things been going with the receivers, especially the guys you just recently drafted in Courtland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton?
I don't know if you guys have been following the buzz there at all, but the hype train for Courtland Sutton is unlike anything I've seen for a Broncos rookie, honestly, since Von Miller was there. He has been beating Chris Harris Jr. He has been beating Bradley Roby. I mean, they're just tossing it up to him, and he's making plays. I mean, people are comparing him to Brandon Marshall in his heyday. So I'm pumping the brakes there. You know, I've seen too many, you know, training camp stars, and seeing his tape, he's still got some work to do as a route runner, and that's a big thing in today's NFL. You know, you got to be a precise route runner, but I'm very excited about him. And I think Deshaun Hamilton, he's probably more of a year down the line when the Broncos have both Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas coming up on contracts that are easy to get out of and can save. If you get rid of both of them, I think upwards of $27 million against the cap. But Courtland Sutton's the guy who's been making just tremendous waves. I feel like it's been the Courtland Sutton show in training camp so far. Von Miller's been taking it easy. You know, Von Miller went 100% every time, it would wreck the entire training camp. But honestly, the star of the Broncos training camp, Case Keenum's, you know, bringing that leadership and actually having a quarterback, but everybody is going nuts about Courtland Sutton.
And with Courtland Sutton, is, like you're saying, he, you know, Chris Harris is obviously, a great DB. Are the plays he's making really like him just going over the top and making great grabs, or are some of the technical issues that people were worried about him kind of pre-draft, has he cleaned some of those things up already?
I think Chris Harris talked about it the other day, and a lot of the stuff is that he's making splash plays on are God-given ability, going up, showing incredible catch radius, body control. And for being a guy with what size he has, his lateral agility and the ability to stop and go is pretty incredible. But as far as the nuance of the wide receiver position, I feel like the route running is something that's going to just take a little bit of time. And they're throwing everything at him, too. They're asking him to learn all three wide receiver spots, you know, X, Z, and slot. So they're going to move him around. And Sanders has spoken about how he's excited to play some slot this year because Case Keenum actually likes throwing over the middle, which is something that Trevor Siemian, I think, is allergic to. So that's big. But as far as the route running goes, that's something that's going to come along, I think, more slowly. But all talk is he's an incredibly bright kid. He's loving the playbook. Coaches are loving him. So I think it's something that's just a matter of time. And if he would have played at a school that, you know, asked him to do more than the fade and the nine route, I think he'd have gotten it there. So it's something that's going to come along, but I think it's people are going to be patient with it.
Hey, Nick, I think one of my like most underrated players in the league for me and one of my favorite players on defense on the side of the ball, especially young guys, is Justin Simmons. I've heard he's been taking some nickel reps during camp. How's he look so far, and what's the transition look like there?
He is a guy, there were some Bronco fans that were speaking during the draft process, you know, mainly my work. I love doing the Broncos stuff, but I really love team building in the NFL draft. And people were saying, you know, the Broncos got a chance to take Minkah Fitzpatrick. And I'm saying, why do you need Minkah Fitzpatrick? You already got Justin Simmons. Last year, when the Broncos were without Aqib Talib in the Miami game, Justin Simmons played some nickel role, and he did pretty well. He struggled against guys when he's played that role, like Travis Kelce. Granted, Travis Kelce's burnt his fair number of anybody in the league so far. Probably the best tight end of the league when you consider health and everything. But Simmons, I think he's probably the guy who, if you had to put three defensive backs out there in cornerback position, I think he's probably the starter over Tremaine Brock and Isaac Yiadom, who's a rookie who's actually been doing pretty well himself. And that ability to stay in that base formation and bring Simmons down to that nickel spot, kind of like what the Eagles did with Malcolm Jenkins last year in their Super Bowl run, I think it's going to be big. And Simmons, I agree with you. He's a budding NFL star right now. Smart guy, very intelligent. Not really a guy with amazing straight line speed. You know, he's not going to run the best 40-yard dash. But again, leaping ability, change of direction, combined with intelligence on that back end. I mean, he's going to make some plays this year, and that just goes – that's big for the Broncos because they've struggled a lot in turnovers over the past two seasons.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a – I really like him. He's a great guy too, so he's easy to cheer for.
Yeah, that's a Miles and I's draft crush there doing big things. So nice to see him balling out there. I guess the next question I had for you here, because it's something that we've actually discussed on our podcast before, and you mentioned some of the names that had been brought in, the Paxton Lynches, the Chad Kellys, obviously there was Brock Osweiler, and now obviously Case Keenum comes in free agency. I guess, generally speaking, when I guess the fan base or the media or people think about kind of John Elway and kind of what he's done building the team, how do people feel about Elway now, kind of as the I guess the shine of the Peyton Manning years starts to fade a little bit.
It's really hit or miss. Honestly, it depends. It's probably like any fan base. You have those curmudgeons who, no matter what, they're going to be pretty irritated. And you have the rah-rah fans who, no matter what, they can do no wrong. I feel like Elway, he was riding pretty high in the Peyton Manning years and built that amazing defense in 2015 around Peyton as well. And that shine has kind of worn off, but I feel like Elway's also reevaluated himself. And what's important, I mean, he's brought in Gary Kubiak back, like I mentioned earlier, who's taken a front office position. Talk is he's going to be the general manager, with Elway shifting to more president duties for the Broncos front office. And I feel like, I mean, he's still the Duke of Denver. People love John Elway. He's done so much more for this franchise than, gosh, I don't know. I can't even think of somebody who's been in a Hall of Fame level player and has brought a team to two Super Bowls and a Super Bowl championship as a general manager as well. So he's still the guy, and he has a big leash because of that. But if the Broncos are picking in the top 10 again this year, and he fails at the next head coach hire, if Vance Joseph is gone after another struggling year, that leash will start to get pretty short. But he's still the guy in Denver, and I think he gets a little bit of leeway.
All right. Well, the last of the questions that I have here before I open it up to Yank or JR here is, you mentioned that you have an affinity to the team building stuff and the draft and some other things like that. Who are some of the under the radar players that maybe aren't as well known or aren't household names that we should be looking for as this game rolls along that maybe will make an impact later on?
Well, a guy that last year shined a lot, my favorite area of any team is the defensive line. Guys that can get after the quarterback, you know, those big uglies up front. I love the offensive line as well, but definitely defensive line. And people are not talking about Shelby Harris. You know, he went to a smaller school, Illinois State, and he played with the Raiders, and they let him go. And he came to Denver last year. And, man, if he was not our best interior pass rusher, he's got great burst. He's very good with his hands. He can dispose of guys pretty well. Kind of looks more like a 3 technique than a 5 technique. But the way Denver plays their defensive line, they want penetrators. They want disruptors. Not that classic, you know, Steelers 3-4 where they're occupying guys and freeing up. No, it's about getting in the backfield and creating chaos. And Shelby Harris is a guy that, you know, you have Bradley Chubb outside, Von Miller, obviously, and Shane Ray, who's looking as good in camp as he has in a long time. So you have to get some interior guys that can step up as well. And I think Shelby Harris is a guy that's really going to step up to the plate this year and earn himself a nice contract. I do believe he's going to be a restricted free agent next year. So that's, I guess that's good for the Broncos. Broncos having a guy like that under team control for a cheap deal. But Shelby Harris is definitely one that I'm really excited about. On the offensive side of the ball, the Broncos have really struggled on the offensive line for the past few years, and he's not really under the radar, but people kind of forget about him, and he's a guy that's really just solidified the entire unit, and that is Jared Veltier. Now, last season, he had a lot of ups and downs. He played left tackle for the Raiders, obviously, and he played for the Cardinals after that, and he moved to right tackle last year, struggled there, and he also battled with injuries. Well, this year he looks a little healthier. You know, going from left tackle to right tackle, it's not easy to do. You know, you can do it in Madden, but actually doing it is really hard for any player to do. But he looks a lot more solid there, and the right tackle has been a position that has been the Achilles heel for the Broncos offense for, gosh, 6 years, 7 years. And when you're in the AFC West, you got to go against Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, Ingram, Bruce Irvin, Justin Houston. I mean, just a crazy amount of edge rushers in the AFC West. So having that right tackle come in, it really feels like it solidified the offensive line. And I think the Broncos' offensive line at least looks league average this season. They were actually a pretty good run-blocking unit last year, but the pass blocking combined with Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch's negligible pocket awareness and movement really was not great. But bringing in Veltier here, I feel like, has had a huge effect on the entire offensive line.
All right. I like how nicely you discussed the pocket movement there and the pocket presence. That was a
very well stated. You got to climb the pocket.
Yeah, you might have a career in politics once all this podcasting stuff is done. JR Prince, did you have any questions for Nick before we let him get back to getting ready to conquer the great outdoors?
And some Nick, I have two questions. Yinka here. One, who could you see as a surprise cut for the Broncos after just before the season starts? And then the second one is, do you feel there's anybody, any maybe veterans who you feel are on the trade block?
I could see Paxton Lynch being cut because he, honestly, people are talking about it that are in the know, say he looks worse now than he did when he first came in. He was always supposed to be a 2-3 year project, but he's regressed. He's not confident, and he's still the guy where if that first read isn't there, he's looking to tuck it and run. And the Broncos are not happy with him. They're not really happy with Chad Kelly either. I would not be surprised if the Broncos look to bring in a veteran, a guy like maybe Mike Glennon or even Teddy Bridgewater. So Paxton Lynch is one I could see them moving on from if they can. They would love to trade him, I think, but we'll see. I think you guys are going to enjoy watching him when you're pulling for the Vikings on Saturday because he's
– So you think they'd be willing to leave that $5 million in dead cap to get rid of Paxton this year?
I think they really would, especially I think it's not that much if you trade him, and they might be able to get somebody that would take a conditional pick, but does not sound like people in the front office are happy with him, and it's almost
maybe Jerry Jones could finally get him.
That would be amazing. That would be incredible. But as far as a guy that would be on the trade block, the Broncos have some pretty good depth at edge rusher, but they have some guys that are probably not going to be able to be retained beyond next season. They brought in Bradley Chubb, who's obviously going to be having a big contract going forward as a top five pick, and Von Miller, not the highest paid defensive player probably for long when Mack and Donald get paid, but that's a huge amount of money going to the edge rusher. So I would not be surprised at all if Shane Ray and or Shaq Barrett are on the block. You can never have enough pass rushers, but considering that those guys are probably going to get paid some decent contracts after this season, if the Broncos could bring in a player, maybe another cornerback, or maybe a day two, early day three pick for one of those guys, I could see it happening.
Hey, JR, I saw you flash off mute there for a second. Do you want to hop in?
No, I'm good. Nick asked exactly what I was going to ask, so thanks, Nick.
All right, look at y'all synced up here. That's what we like. And last question before we get you out of here, Nick. What is your prediction for the win total for Denver for this upcoming season?
I think that with every single day, the Chargers, who were my pick for the AFC West, have another serious injury, it seems like. And I think there's going to be a little bit more growing pains with the Chiefs than people think. And honestly, put on your tinfoil cap here, but I think Gruden is trying to get back to the booth because nothing he's doing is making any sense to me. He wants to get that $10 million per year guaranteed for 10 years and go back to calling Monday Night Football. So I think the AFC West is more up for grabs than people think. And I got the Broncos at 7-9 wins. Let me just be a homer for a second. I normally try not to be that, but I'm going to go with the Broncos 9-7 this year. Going to surprise a little bit of better offensive line. And I think the defensive front, especially the edge rushers in the defensive line, are as deep as they've been since the Broncos won the Super Bowl in 2015. And I think that combination is going to propel them to 9 wins this season.
All right. And I know you've been, before we got on air, you mentioned that you'd been doing some backpacking and then you're going camping with buddies. Have you had time to put any pieces out? I know you said you'd recorded some stuff for your podcast. Is there anything that we should be plugging before you get on out of here?
I just released a article today on mainly, I'm writer for the Broncos, so it's got a Bronco vantage point, but it was, everybody's going to be talking about the quarterback battle, Case Keenum versus Kirk Cousins, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Kyle Sloter versus Chad Kelly, a lot of storylines there. But I think the biggest storyline for the Broncos, offensive line has been such a big issue over the past few seasons. And as you guys are well aware, the Vikings defensive front is arguably the best in football with Griffin, Hunter, Richardson, and Joseph. So that's the big thing I'm looking forward. And I kind of went in depth with that matchup. Even though it's only going to be probably one or two series, it's something to look forward to that I'm really excited about. And it's really going to be a good litmus test for that Broncos offensive line.
Awesome, man. Well, again, thanks for coming on with us today. I've gone ahead and put the link to that article in the show notes, so definitely check that out, listeners. And Nick, you have a good one, and stay safe out there, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on, guys. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Nick.
Please hold. Please hold.
Okay, well, we got a couple things here to bring it home. We have a couple questions here. So I'm just going to give each of you one of these questions to answer. And then we're going to wrap this thing on up. So I should give this to Miles, but I'm not going to because I'm petty. So JR, question here from Drew Pelkey. What are the realistic expectations for Treadwell with having a strong camp, but still behind Diggs, Thielen, and possibly Rudolph in targets?
I think a realistic expectation for Treadwell is probably anywhere from 300 to 500 yards just because there's so many mouths to feed. in the Vikings offense. You talk about Diggs and Thielen and Rudolph, of course. Those are going to be probably your top three most targeted guys. And then you add in Dalvin Cook into the equation as well, who they're going to use out wide more this season as well. So there's just so many mouths to feed and only one football to go around. We know Kirk Cousins loves to share the wealth, but there just isn't a lot of footballs to be thrown his way because they have so many more other guys that they probably would go to before they target him just because they're higher up on the depth chart and more proven guys. So I think 300 to 500 yards is probably a realistic expectation for Treadwell.
All right. Miles Gorham, do you have any soup recipes? This question is from Vikes Ginger.
Do I have any? No, my wife probably does. I don't.
Soup recipes. Well, for the next show, we'll need you to get one of those recipes so that you can answer this this very important question.
I bet Dalvin Cook does, though. Oh, drum roll.
There you go. All right. So no soup recipes from Miles. And last but certainly not least, the Sexy Prince has been called out by Nick. Let me try not to mess this up. Nick Noskowiec? No, I definitely messed it up. It's just going to be Nick today. Nick, what does Yinka think of the character selection in the new Smash, and when will he actually challenge me? Sexy Prince?
First of all, I don't want to lose a follower for beating them that badly in a video game. Second of all, I have not played the new Smash yet, but I will very soon. And then I will, I guess, be willing to risk losing a follower after I beat you badly. Just ask Arif. He knows how good I am at Smash.
Oh. So you're saying you put the beats to Arif? You beat him down? How bad?
He doesn't speak of it. That's why he unfollowed me.
Oh. Wait, hold up. Arif doesn't follow you. Arif follows Miles, but he doesn't follow you?
Yo, me and Arif are tight, man.
No, he blocked me for a little bit because I beat him quite badly at Smash. So
I saw what he said, but I'm going to leave it at that.
Oh.
That's like a y'all got beef like Xavier Rose and Stephon Diggs.
Well, all right. That's it. We've made it to the end. We covered everything that we wanted to cover. Yeah, that's it. We're going to go ahead and wrap this thing on up, and then what I'm gonna end up doing is taking that piece that I just said right there and putting that at the end of the show, and then right here I'm gonna be like, yo, we're gonna go talk to our guest, and then edit that in, and then we'll have a whole show. All right, well, that's it. We'll talk to y'all soon. JR, Miles, Yinka, thanks for coming out. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us, and yeah, we will talk to y'all soon. Have a good one.